Welcome to the podcast!
Come be part of the conversations that happen around my kitchen table.
He's John Brannion, and he's been a stand-up comic for more than 30 years.
She's Amanda McKinney, and she's been my daughter for her whole life.
Our family believes laughter is a gift from God. We often discover it while discussing culture, faith, and family.
So go ahead and pull up a chair, neighbor. Can I call you Carl? There's plenty of room here for you.
We didn't check it before we started.
I like how you just left them on your ears yelling at
him. I was screaming.
I did not set up the machinery today, and so it's not my fault. Hey, what's up, Carl? I just made my son-in-law deaf, so if you don't hear from Luke, it's because he's not following the conversation.
It's too loud. I thought you turned it down after you found out it was the wrong one.
I did. I put it right back where it was before, but he was still acting like it was causing him pain.
I'm good.
Are you okay now? He's far away from his microphone, or is that just me not being able to hear?
You're pretty far away from his microphone. Well,
I'm pretty tall, so.
You have to get closer. Here. In a book?
No, I'm good.
We've got got some babies on the way. You already know that, Carl. But Tabby is getting close. There's some debate today about whether or not she even has her due date right. It was supposed to be like the 24th of this month, but now
she's way out there.
I didn't know.
Yeah, she is.
Her profile from a distance is
impressive. We were making note of that while we were outside, maybe playing disc golf, but I don't want to talk about that. But on the way back, we were looking at Tabby, and yeah, it looks like it's impressive.
Well,
on the side.
I'm her birth doula, and she told me she was due May 24, but then she was like, "Oh, so May 25, I'll be 41 weeks." And I was like, that's the day after your due date. So you'll be 40 weeks plus one day. And she goes, not according to my doctor. And I was like, when does your doctor think your due date is? And she's like, I thought it was May 24. And I said, did he tell you it was being moved up?
Did he
and
say she's a like, different day?
No. And I said, then the 25th will be 40 weeks and one day. And she was like, yeah, but every time I've gone to my appointments recently, they told me I was 38 weeks, which is, that is obviously too late for when we're recording this. But right. She never asked. She apparently hasn't been correcting them or saying, I'm calculating to a different due date. And so hopefully she gets that cleared up here at her next appointment. Because I'm like, I was under the impression that we had at least three more weeks. Well, almost three more weeks.
Right.
I think that there's a benefit in your doctor thinking your due date is later than it is because they're pushing for early labor already. So just let them think. Let them think you're going early.
Most of the mothers are the ones pushing for earlier labor.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
No.
Well, you've got a schedule, right? So if this baby doesn't come by the 24th, then she's not going to be able to have it.
Everybody likes to blame the medical community, but like, I actually know somebody. This is not a joke. I know a woman who's scheduled to have her baby induced at 37 and a half weeks. I have never heard, other than an emergency, I've never heard of them doing that early because you're not even full term until 38.
Did they do it?
They did. And then a few weeks later, at her due date, like 2.5 weeks later, she said, today was my due date. Thank you so much, little man, for coming early.
Like he had a choice.
I kid you not. And I know that this sounds...
I was so considerate of you.
I know this sounds like judgmental, but I took a screenshot of that post and sent it to the sister, my friend who's her sister, and was like, okay, refresh my memory. Didn't she have a scheduled induction? And my friend's response was nothing except the eye roll emoji.
That was so thoughtful of you, little man. after I forcibly ejected you from the womb.
That is a point of contention between those two sisters. And so it's similar with like the breastfeeding thing. It's like, oh, there's not enough education, or oh, the, you know, medical community is too quick to recommend formula. And that's just not my experience. When you're talking to the actual women who are making these decisions, they go shopping for a doctor who will tell them the thing that
bring it out
hear
as quickly as yeah possible.
Yeah, often. Not every time. Not every time.
Well, is that a thing now? Have we crossed over into that phase or that philosophy where people go looking for doctors like they go looking for churches?
Oh,
it's
yes
like I want a church that's going to conform to my theology. I want a doctor that's going to follow my pattern for yes healthcare.
Yes, yeah, yes. And there's nothing wrong with getting a second or a third opinion on something that's kind of serious and controversial. If you're not expecting to hear a thing and you hear it, okay, go and see if you can get another person to agree. But yes, there are, now because we prioritize emotions over everything, if a patient, in this case the pregnant woman, has any kind of feelings about anything in any direction, it's like, you ought to get support for that. And that's the word, the buzzword among
support
mothers. Support.
Affirmation.
Right. You ought to be able to find somebody who agrees down the line with all of your beliefs.
It's
right
one of the selling points of the online virtual therapy thing. Is like, if you don't like your first therapist, we'll get you another one.
Right.
Yeah, we'll get you somebody. That we, yeah. We'll stay with you until you find a therapist that's saying what you already believe. Yeah, it's like church.
Right. Well, church has been obsolete for a long time now because the church people just tell you, go find a therapist or a doctor. And so then you go find the therapist or the doctor and they don't say what you want. And so then you find a different one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's very efficient. Actually, it's not, but it's very convenient if you're the person who was complaining for the entire third trimester about how uncomfortable you were and how you just couldn't wait to meet your baby and how it just was going to be so relieving when you weren't carrying around this massive weight anymore. And then, lo and behold, at 37 and a half weeks, your doctor got tired of hearing you complain and offered to forcibly remove him. And
it kind of makes medical school... unnecessary.
To be fair, there's quite a difference in philosophy between providers.
Yes.
Like it's not like you draw one from the hat and it's golden.
Right.
Like there are several doctors that I would not want to be a patient of. I work in a hospital.
Right. You know what I was thinking recently?
What are their names?
They're all their first names are doctor.
Let's hear their names. We'll put their phone numbers and let's dox them.
I was thinking about the fact that pretty much everything is social skills, like it's interpersonal skills, like navigating having a doctor that you're working with on your team is a social skill. And I always got along pretty well with all of my teachers in school. I've mentioned this before, because I was pretty good at waiting and like listening/observing for a while. Like I did not jump directly into participating in classroom settings. I would like feel out who are the kids who raise their hand all the time. How does the teacher respond to that? Mm-hmm. You know, do we get started on time? Do we actually complete the things on our syllabus? All of these things. And then I would kind of know, I would know a lot about who was in charge of that classroom and how, where the boundaries were and what I should do, you know, to kind of get in their good graces. I think it's very similar to that when you're trying to negotiate a new medical provider, because the doctor who delivered our last three babies retired. And so now this is my first experience with this doctor I have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's different. But I was also helping Megan and Tabby navigate conversations with their doctors when I was their doulas the last time they had babies. And there were some complaints, some common complaints that I hear from women a lot. Oh, he's not hearing me. He seems to be pressuring me. He's, you know, communication is really hard. He seems like he wants me to do blah, 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 and this and that. And I started realizing it was really hard to know how to give advice to a person in that situation because I wasn't actually physically present at their appointments. And so I couldn't hear the tone of his voice and how they were saying, like I was getting everything secondhand from them. And I didn't know for sure how much of it, not that they're liars or whatever, but I didn't know for sure I wasn't able to do the same process that I've done all of my life with feeling out, you know.
Where you could sit back and watch the dynamic and.
But I actually did a pretty good job, I think, figuring out Megan's doctor dynamic by the end. Because I said, Megan, I'm not sure you're being as explicit as you think you're being with him. I think you're leaving some. I think he doesn't really know what to do with you. And I said, I don't think it's your fault, but I don't think it's his fault either. It's just one of those things where you're missing each other. And I said, because he called her and said, I scheduled your induction, which she adamantly did not want. But I don't think she really communicated exactly how adamantly she didn't want one. Because even when he called her, she had been in labor for like 8 hours at that point. But the conversation she relayed to me, she said that on the phone, she said to him, I don't think it will be necessary for me to come in for the induction. I said, Megan, did you tell him I'm in labor?
She was or like, did you leave
no.
him? No. So he's like, does she expect me to make a house call? Does she? Am I supposed to drive to her house?
I'm not convinced I'm actually pregnant.
Are we? Are we going to meet in some public place and do this?
Or? It was almost that bad because she. I said, "Why didn't you say I've been having contractions?" Well, actually, I said, "Tell it. Why didn't you say I've been in labor since 8 o'clock this morning?" And she goes, "Well, I didn't want to call it labor because I was afraid they might stop, and then." And then he, oh, and it's like, then what? Like, yeah, you can yeah. still tell him you're in labor.
You can still tell him in labor, and then it's the contraction stopped. I'm sure that won't be
she
the first time.
She didn't want to call him that.
She didn't want to jinx
it. That an OBGYN has ever had that happen.
So instead, she's on the phone, and he's like, I scheduled your induction for tomorrow at 9 p.m. And she's like, well, I don't know. If that will be necessary. It's like, you could have said, I'll see you at the hospital in a few hours, and give it to him that way, but she didn't really have the confidence to make a claim like that. Yeah.
How much mental clarity do you have in active labor? I mean, well, you're expecting too much.
In that case, since you gentlemen don't have a whole lot of personal experience with
labor. We don't.
Labor.
Minimal personal experience with labor.
She was actually, what was freaking her out a little bit was the fact that she was having so long in between contractions. She was going like 20 minutes between contractions. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, no, they're not close enough together. Right. This could still go for days and days. Yeah, that sounds reasonable to a couple of men.
To a couple of guys who don't know what they're talking about.
That's still early labor, isn't it?
Okay. Pull up a chair, Carl. Let me tell you what I told Megan.
Listen to the doula. Listen to Mandy.
It depends on the types of contractions. And a first-time mom, it's very likely that, yeah, we're still pretty early. But Megan was on her fourth, and I asked her, what kind of contractions are you having?
The squeezy kind.
No. It feels like you have a bladder infection. It's like a really spiky, like...
Like a burning?
Yes, like a burning spike. I don't know how to describe it. And I said, when your uterus is taking a break for that long, it gets a lot of... It stores energy... And when they're close together, the contractions aren't usually as intense until right there at the end. But when they're farther apart, it's able to make a lot of use out of the squeezing power. And I said, when you have a contraction after 20 minutes, is it like curl your toes, hold your breath, you know, I need to be at the hospital at this moment. But then it goes away. And for 20 minutes, you start doubting your sanity because it's right. Like, did I just experience what I experienced? And she's like, that
yes,
one. Yeah, that one. It's B. And I said, you can go to the hospital whenever you want. You're in labor. You're probably not going to have a baby on the floor any time in the next few hours, but those contractions
are... But the baby
is
on the way.
Yes, those are labor contractions. She's like, I don't want to go for Braxton Hicks. I said, that's not how
Braxton
it feels.
Hicks, yeah. Right. Braxton Hicks are not regular like that, are
well,
they?
They weren't regular, which was the problem. She would have a couple that were 10 minutes apart, and then she'd have maybe one that was all of a sudden like 5 minutes apart. After that, and then she'd be like, wow, okay. And then she'd go half hour or something absurd with absolutely nothing. So if you're I just snorted if you heard that. Sorry, Carl.
I did hear it, but I thought Luke scooted his chair.
It was my nose because I was trying to breathe and talk at the same time.
I looked at Luke. I thought it was him.
Excuse me. If you're a pregnant woman, Carl, then this will all make sense eventually. If you're a man... this will never make any sense.
Did you notice that she said pregnant woman and not pregnant person?
This is like talking about disc golf for some people.
That's absolutely against her doula training. Oh, yeah. To not refer to them as a pregnant person.
Speaking of which, if you're Tabby's doula, why have you not been going to her appointments?
Yeah.
You don't go to the appointments as a doula.
Oh. Actually, you're just a birth doula. You're not an appointment doula.
Right. Well.
Is there an appointment doula?
No. There's a postpartum doula. But again, I don't have much interaction with the actual medical staff because it's not a medical role. I'm there for Tabby when she has questions. And if she wants to come hang out with me or I go to her house, all of my interaction is with the actual woman and her family that are welcoming the new baby. So All I do is say, hey, please let your doctor know that you're planning to have me be present so that he's not surprised. But even the doctor doesn't really care because the doctor in a hospital birth doesn't show up until literally.
I was just about to say, you only spend a few minutes with the doctor. Right. They don't even come in.
Right. And so you can call the hospital and do pre-registration.
Is doula a feminine term, like because it ends in A, or is that just is a male a doula?
No, I think you can have male doulas, but it comes from the word for servant.
I want to be the husband doula.
Like,
do they have that?
The deacon and the doula.
Like to show support for the father.
For the dude, yeah.
Actually, my job really is more for the father by the time.
Because they don't know what to do. Yeah. Those dumb, dopey dads, they don't know how to help.
A lot of it's wait and see, and it's fine, and you don't need to do more, and just being there is good enough.
Her job is to say, go get some ice.
Yeah. Your job is to say, about time you lost that baby weight, huh? That's what the father should say.
I was mostly chatting with Corey just about like a bunch of random stuff, because by that point, Megan had had an epidural and was fairly comfortable.
She was feeling great.
Corey was comfortable after he farted. So.
Yeah, that's a family legend now. But but yeah, point being that you may not really understand all of this or care about all of this information, but just trust me when I say being able to interact with different people is an important skill. It's really helpful to be able to read a person, try to figure out like where they're coming from, to the best. I mean, I'm talking very, very general surface level kind of, you know, feel for a person because you don't get a lot of time with them. But just be able to think, back with the hospital thing again, the nurse comes in and we had never met her before. And immediately some of the things she was saying were helping me recognize that she hadn't been on the job there very long. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she had transferred from another hospital or if she was just like fresh out of school, but there were certain things that you could tell she was nervous about as a result of being new, and that changes the relationship. Like, you're going to interact differently with a 50-year, you know, L&D nurse than you would with...
You can calm down, honey. I can do this without you.
Oh, we had one who came in who had been there for 30 years, a nurse who came later, like probably 6 or 8 hours after we'd already been there. She was the one who stayed in the room the longest and just was so calming and... Because she was no nonsense. She was obviously at ease. It didn't matter what was happening or what information she was given. Mm-hmm. It didn't faze her. She was like, oh, yeah, we see that all the time. It'll be fine. And I really, really liked her. But I liked the one who was new, too. It was just, you have to know who you're talking to in order. It's easier to like people when you have them a little bit more understanding for their, you know, for their background. So that's all. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Get to know your teachers the best you can. Get to know your doctor the best you can, because it may be that you come from a different place philosophically, but also in general, these professionals do want to help. And it's just a matter of how quickly can you guys get on the same page and help each other? how quickly can you communicate in such a way that he or she can be a help to you?
Right. You know? Well, and that's true.
Google defines doula as specifically a woman.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Google.
Without formal obstetric training.
Right.
Who provides guidance and support to a pregnant woman during labor.
What does Google say a woman is?
But that's not strictly right, because there is such thing as a postpartum doula. So it's not strictly during labor. There are women who will come to your house and like help make meals and teach you about baby care and, you know, things like that. Clean your house a
bit. Way to go, Google.
So.
Oh, doula from ancient Greek, female slave.
That's why I said it means servant. Like a deacon.
But he's still emphasizing the female part.
Yes. That's because of the ending. I think he's right. I think that probably if you changed the ending, it would apply to males too.
Yep. But. Yep.
Yep. So anyways, send me all of your important questions. I won't be able to answer them.
Intercommunication is important.
Unless I've met you and your doctor, I probably won't be able to help. But
right. We had another thing happen this week that was sort of, doesn't have anything to do with birth, really, but we were talking.
Oh, wait. Challenge accepted. Go ahead.
What?
I'm going to make it related to birth somehow. I don't even know what you're going
to
say.
It's related to communication.
Meanwhile, I've been getting yelled at for telling people to have babies.
He's salty.
You've actually sort of yelled at him on this podcast about that.
Yes. Well, apparently he didn't learn his lesson because the guy, now he's gone from telling women to stay home to telling their husbands to keep impregnating their wives. I'm like, honey.
Stop that.
Honey, more judicious advice.
There
giving,
are also
please.
Abortion doulas and gender transition doulas.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
That does not surprise me either.
Okay, so Dad's going to say something, and then I'm going to make it related to birth. Go ahead.
Well, unless you change the church culture, the church will not change.
Okay, that you know. You have to actually continue and explain what that means, and I will find the connection.
Oh, see, now you're changing the thing. Yeah, so it was a
say one word or
it was
five.
A slide, Carl, that I saw at a conference. A guy that I know was at some sort of a discipleship making conference and was posting pictures from the conference. And one of the slides that was up on the screen during the talk had that phrase that unless we change the church culture, the church will not change.
Let's change the culture of the church. The church will not be changed.
Right. The church will not be changed. And I thought, what a hilariously convoluted way to say that things have to change in order
to change.
In order to change.
Well, because there are some things you would actually have to. There's some things that you could use. How do I say it? Like, unless you change the paint color, the house will not change.
Right.
You could make a statement like that. It would be wrong. But, like,
unless you change the color, no matter how you say it, unless you change the color of the wall color will not change.
Right. But I'm saying the issue here is the definition of the word culture. Because people think by adding that word in there, it, like, gives you a very significant
right
piece of
right.
the quote.
What he was talking about, it was a discipleship making conference. And so the gist of it is that the church is doing a poor job of making disciples. And so they're saying, unless we
No matter
how I say it, it's going to make me laugh. Right. Unless we start making disciples, then we will not make disciples.
Right.
If you're the attitude is what they're saying. They use the word culture, but what they really mean is the attitude or the emphasis or the priorities. Unless you change the priorities and make the priority about discipleship, then discipleship is not going to be the priority. It still comes off sounding dumb.
Well, but there are ways that you can say it that it actually could potentially be helpful or maybe even sort of profound. Like if I wanted to take it to...
Really?
Birth.
Ah, here we go. As soon as she said there's ways you could say it, it's like, here's where the
unless
birth is going to
unless you change the culture in families, okay? So unless you change the culture of the families getting the medical care, then the medical system won't change. Oh, now we've made a statement that might actually be useful in
right,
conceptualizing.
But that's sort of cheating because you're saying unless you change the culture of the family, the medical culture will not change. You're not saying you have to say family again.
I know that, but I'm saying the reason people think that it's not convoluted is because they added the word culture in the first part and not in the second, and they think the word culture is
changes everything.
Yeah, it's providing that right. necessary contrast. To
You're not talking about the church now. You're talking about church culture, and right. that's a completely separate thing.
And the question
thing.
Is, what is culture? Oh, it's the essence of what a thing is.
It's what the church believes. It's the church's attitude about discipleship, for example.
Right. Yeah. Right. So everything that is significantly about the thing needs to change for
the thing
to change significantly. Yes. Right. That's what makes it silly. Because there are many rhetorical devices that use a very similar sounding formula, and it's not as stupid. But that one was stupid.
Well, you could say it... You pointed out that whenever we go out of our way to try to be profound or quotable, whenever we try to come up with a line that we can say that, hey, isn't this a clever line? Isn't this a clever turn of phrase? Right. But it's not really a turn of phrase. It's just almost an exact repeat of what you previously
said.
It's
like listening to a child tell a knock-knock joke, and you know what they're trying to do. And... it's what makes it funny, actually, is the fact that you know they have heard a joke, clearly, and they're trying.
That it starts with knock-knock.
It starts with knock-knock. My favorite are when they start doing the, what do you get when you cross a, and then they grab two random things
right. and smash them together.
Yeah, yeah, but they almost always forget
Did that slide have a pretty background on it? Or?
It was pretty utilitarian.
Oh, okay.
It was
just solid,
very
blue.
Basic.
I think we've done that on Skews, didn't we? Where it was just gobbledygook phrases on a pretty background. The long way around is the shortest way home, or whatever.
I think we
seems
did.
Seems like something we would
I
have
think
done.
We did. We took some kind of stupid idioms and put them on backgrounds.
I never get tired of coming up with absolutely horrible quotes or rhetoric, and because my idea is always, let's put this out on the internet and see how many people unironically share it.
Right.
They're like, oh yes, this moved me today.
This speaks to me.
I can't this help
is
it.
So true.
I have such a morbid sense of humor.
So true.
I love watching people's souls shrivel up. I'm like, oh, you poor thing.
You can't train a child up without breaking a few eggs.
Oh, yeah, we've definitely played
that
game.
We definitely mixed
before.
Up the idiom yeah. or the cliches.
Mix them and see what you
Never
get.
Never count your chickens when they're running around with their heads cut off. That was your Uncle David.
I distinctly remember saying the very first one we started with was, well, he ain't the sharpest tool in the box.
He ain't the sharpest bulb in the box.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he ain't the brightest
hammer. He ain't the brightest bulb in the box. And he's not the sharpest star in the sky, how we swapped.
He's not the brightest tool in the box. Man. And he's not the sharpest star in the sky.
It's kind of hard because if you've been making sense for a while, it's kind of hard to intentionally not make sense.
It's hard to intentionally
be
convoluted. But you can do it. And some people it comes easy, like the guy making the slides. At the conference.
Have no trouble.
Some people could just rapid fire. Just
my
pump
favorite
them out.
Was the guy who was like, listen, I didn't have any trouble understanding what he was trying to say. I wasn't as confused as some people. I wasn't confused either. I was laughing. Big difference.
Yeah. Well, the point, I shared it, and I was as protective of the identity as I could possibly be. It was I cut out all of everything except for that slide. So there was, I even cut the speaker out of the picture so that
not trying to
call anybody out.
Yeah. Not trying to put anyone on blast.
Not trying to make it personal. Yep. And I didn't even reference where it was from. It was completely contextless. But there was still some guy, and this always fascinates me. The guy still showed up and said, oh, it was a great conference so far. And here's the context is key. Yeah, here's what he was trying to say, and context is key. And it's like, dude, first of all, I specifically didn't say where it was from. Mm-hmm. And then secondarily, I know context is key. That's why this is funny.
Can you imagine a kid telling a joke and having all the grown-ups laugh and having some pearl-clutching, like, hoity-toity third party showing up and being like, now, guys, you really shouldn't laugh at that because here's what he was trying to say. It's like, I know. Like the time when Aunt Bonnie was like, what has two bird legs, a bird beak, and bird feathers? And bird
feathers. What is it?
It's a bird.
A bird.
And then everybody laughed. And if somebody was like, if somebody rushed to her defense, listen, you guys have to understand.
Stop laughing at
first
her.
First of all, she's very young. You have to understand the context. Contextually, she's very young.
She doesn't know.
She's doing her best.
She's just trying to come up with a joke, and you guys are mocking her attempt.
It's like, calm down. We get it. Laughing about it is the kind of culture I would like for church people to start having.
Didn't Colin have a joke where you guys all... Yes. That was the elephant joke, right?
Yes. What has two legs and doesn't... Or what walks on four legs and doesn't walk? What walks on four
three,
legs?
I thought it was three legs.
Maybe it was three legs.
I think it's three legs. At least that's the way you told it to me before.
Maybe it was three legs. But it doesn't really matter because it doesn't walk. It's an elephant.
And it's an elephant. What has three legs and doesn't walk?
It's an elephant.
An elephant.
Oh, well, it is three legs. There it is. Okay, yeah. This was 2017. Actually, July 3rd. So we're coming up on the anniversary.
Yeah. So he would have been how old in 2017? Five?
He was born in 2013, but September. So he was almost...
Five.
Four.
No, almost four.
Almost okay. Four. But still three. Mm-hmm. Well, walks on three legs but doesn't walk. I don't know. What is it? An elephant. Cammy and I both laugh. Me.
Yep.
But elephants do walk, plus they have four legs. He goes, well, this one has three. And I said, okay, fair enough. Colin, what has three legs and is a baby? Cammy, is it a baby elephant? Colin, no. Actually, yes.
Okay. We have told that joke many, many times since then. Is it a baby elephant?
They're so funny. And if you come in quickly because you can't stand when people are laughing and
at them.
Joking.
That's the thing that we always try to emphasize on this podcast is we are definitely laughing at the people. We're laughing at them for their miscommunication, for their lack of, they don't understand it. They don't understand why, what makes a joke. And so we're laughing at them for their ignorance, for their naivete. We can call it mockery. Well, you don't need to back away from that word.
Well, I liked when they said making fun.
Making fun.
Somebody told you
them.
Sometimes misunderstanding and making fun is easier than trying to understand.
Yeah, that's
and it's right. Like, no, making fun is almost always harder because you have to both understand and not be a stick in the mud like you are.
Like you. You have to, first of all, you have to understand what's funny about it. And then you have to have the audacity and the courage to actually laugh at it.
First of all, you have to understand that fun things aren't inherently bad. And apparently, you have not learned that.
What's your problem with fun? Why am I the bad guy for making fun?
You're
you literally
fun over there.
Accused me of making fun like it's a bad thing. What is wrong with you?
You should be like me. Never have fun.
Never make any fun.
For anyone. Never make it fun at all.
Some people need a joy doula. Like this is laughter.
You no,
make sad.
I have thought though that like the postpartum doula, for example, might be something I would be interested in the future to kind of help a person make that adjustment in those first few weeks. The newborn phase is really, really hard, especially the first time around.
I think it'd be more helpful to have a terrible twos doula.
I was just going to say that. I think that having a
twos doula is a kind of a fun thing to say.
Like a toddler doula or like just a parenting doula in general, mm-hmm. AKA an aunt.
Isn't that called a nanny?
No, because nannies actually take the children. usually there are different levels.
So you're talking about like a consultant.
Yes, that's what a doula does. She does not talk directly to the doctor for you. She doesn't make any decisions. There's no legally binding, you know, authority that she has at all. She's literally just there just as moral a friend. Support. Yeah. She's like, hey, here's what I think. And you can take it or leave it. But this is, you know, this is something that I'm here to help you manage emotionally more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, parenting is a thing that could reasonably require a doula. And that's why we need to stop telling people to just go have more babies unless they have some support.
I'm not gonna.
He thought you should.
He's not gonna. He doesn't not see that happening. Happen. At least he knows himself.
I hear the words coming out of your mouth. I do not accept them.
Oh my
agree
goodness.
Agree to disagree.
It's there are people who are like there's the wild extreme people who are like women are made to birth, okay?
Amen.
You're one of those people.
No. Yes, but it's literally like saying, so just go do it. Like just right. go well,
you know, being somewhat selective.
In all fairness, the reason that he is so gung-ho about children and everybody having them is because he doesn't realize that everybody is not married to you.
He's never had to give birth, and so he's like, it's the easiest thing in the world. Let me describe
that
it for you.
Right. What I'm
first
saying.
Of all,
he's saying. His
you have saying it's worth it.
His perspective is warped, but it's your fault,
Let me
partially.
Tell you about childbirth. Okay, you have to drive to the hospital. Okay, and that can be stressful. Make sure you don't go too fast, yeah. but get her
Make
there
sure
quick.
Make sure there's gas in the car.
Once you're there,
Change
though,
the oil.
You have to tell them who you are. Let them put the bands on your wife.
It'll hurt a little bit.
It'll hurt if she squeezes your hands too hard.
Oh, this is hilarious. Here's
how childbirth
works.
Here's
how hard it is to have a baby. First, you have to put the bags in the car.
Yeah.
Don't forget the cell phone charger.
Don't forget to bring her ice. Yeah. Yeah. That's how childbirth works.
But really, when you boil it all down, you look at this list, having a baby is not that hard.
It's worth it. That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there are challenging aspects. Like when she starts yelling really loud, that's hard, but worth it.
Some of the diapers will be smelly.
Have more babies.
It's not really the first one. It's kind of a challenge, but after you get used to it, you get the swing of it.
Luke's perspective on that would be: at first, you might be tempted to think your baby has a shrunken head, but it'll like pop, it'll inflate, it'll just
pop
be like,
out,
boop, and then all it's of okay. a sudden it'll look normal.
They
and
have
then
a soft
fine.
Spot, and their head will get the proper shape over time.
You may have a very uncomfortable bed to sleep on, and you may not get food at a reasonable hour. You may have to wait pretty late.
Your wife might be slightly grouchy.
Yeah. But sacrifices must be made.
How to Have a Baby by Luke McKinney. A handbook for
and
fathers and mothers.
And you just would keep going. Not just the labor, but then he's now giving people advice on careers
you gotta
and quitting.
Figure out the car seat business. And
quit your job and just stay home. Women were made to raise babies.
They were
babies.
Made to do this.
They're nurturing.
It'll come natural.
Just go have as many babies as you possibly
okay, let
can.
Let me tell you the process for raising a toddler. Get up in the morning, go to work.
Go to work.
Eventually they'll start speaking somehow.
Wait for a text message from your wife.
Oh, this is so great. You got to write a book, Luke. How to Have Babies.
Oh,
how to raise a toddler. Get up and go to work.
Come home at dinner time.
Put them to bed.
Yep. Well, you know, put them in the bath occasionally. You know?
Make sure it's not too hot.
In my experience, babies practically raise themselves.
It's a very busy hour there in the evening.
Toddlers can demand 45 minutes to an hour of your evening.
When
easily.
They're hungry,
just learn to expect.
Bring
learn
them
to lean
the
on
mom.
Your spouse.
Ask for help. If she asks
Don't be afraid to ask your wife for some help.
If she asks you to hold the baby while she's in the shower, stand patiently directly outside the door the whole time.
and ask, are you about done? Yeah. Are you about done?
Utilize the grandparents. Get him out.
He's not that bad. He's actually home. He's present here. But, like, yeah, 8 hours a day, it's the mom by herself.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
That's not in the book.
It's super hard. Like, people think that, oh, they just know what to do. And Christians say these sort of things. Mm-hmm. They say God designed you for this. And again, granted.
Well, they start with marriage. Christian people are good at starting with marriage. It's like, you know what? Just get married. Just get married and you'll work it out. And it's like, no, they won't. Yeah. Not unless they've got the proper wisdom going into marriage.
Right.
There's a lot of people. And when I was growing up, like in the 80s and I would hear them say, like, people get pregnant. The women would get pregnant.
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day, they would get pregnant, and they would say, well, you know, you're going to get married now. And it's like, no, the mistakes have been made. And so the right thing to do is to marry. And that was just understood as common knowledge. Right. Now that you got pregnant out of wedlock, that's not ideal. But now you just get married, and that will fix everything. And boy, does it not. boy, does that not fix things.
No. Well, I think a lot of times when the people were giving that advice, it wasn't just Luke giving that kind of advice to mm-hmm. just his coworkers, but it was people who had been married 50 years themselves. And right. So if you're coming from a culture in your family where you have several married couples saying, all right, now the next step is to get married, that may actually be the case because they actually are going to be there to help you.
Well, and there's also you're assuming that everybody has the same philosophy about marriage and family that you do.
Right.
And so Luke is, he's sort of naive. And again, it's your fault, partially. But you don't, it used to be that you could assume, sort of, in America, that everybody kind of had the idea that, okay, once you get married now, that's going to change some things. Now you are you're supposed to function. If you're the husband, you're functioning as the head of this household, and you can't run around and just do whatever you want anymore.
Right.
I think I suffer from the same thing that you do, where we immediately latch on to somebody we think is like us, like on first impression, and then we're like, yay.
Well, you're just so ready for a friend, like so ready to have a peer who actually gets you, and they're coming from the same place.
You assume the best in people.
I
tend to do that too.
Well, and I don't want you to stop assuming the best of people either. I just want you to assume the worst of the world as far as like the circumstances that are going to get thrown at you. If you leave a person, if you genuinely like a person and you think they're a really great person, you don't want to throw them out in the middle of the ocean without any life rafts. You want them to be able to, you want to give them the best chance of success. So I
should say have more children and then hand them your card.
Well,
if somebody's drowning in the middle of the ocean, throw them a baby.
Mm-hmm. I'm worried that's basically what's happening here. Is it's like, oh, somebody will take it from there. Like just have the babies and someone will be along in a moment to assist you. Mm-hmm. And there aren't enough of us. Like the Titus.
I would argue that a lot of your wisdom has come from having the babies and raising them.
Yes.
You didn't start with all of it.
I would say that all wisdom comes from the Holy Spirit. So if I have any wisdom to offer, it is because of the influence of God himself.
Well, right? That's true. That's
because
what comes
over
from. But he uses various
again,
mediums and channels and people.
Yes, but
ways
what I'm saying is over and over and over again, I've seen women who have had the same circumstances as I have and have gone a very different direction. It's like, oh, I'm really uncomfortable. I'm 37 weeks pregnant. I don't want to wait anymore. So I'm going to have an induction.
Baby induced.
Yeah. And that is a different choice.
Thank you, little man, for coming early.
And then I'm going to thank fate.
Well, inductions do fail. So she's just thinking the baby cooperated.
Apparently. Oh, my gosh.
Dragged the baby kicking and screaming literally out of the womb.
I said it's like somebody saying, early. I don't want to breastfeed. It hurts. It's inconvenient. So I'm going to give my kid formula. And then thanking the baby.
Thank you for drinking
for
this
drinking
formula.
The only thing you've ever offered him. Like you can't. Anyway.
My baby is so considerate.
I don't want to make this too much about one particular person. But the circumstances can either...
If you don't feed the baby, the baby
won't be fed.
If you don't leave the baby in the womb, the baby won't stay in the womb. Yeah. But the saying is... Oh, I was going
to make a PowerPoint slide.
What's the saying about the egg? The same water that hardens the egg softens the something.
What?
The same water that hardens the egg
softens the potato.
Softens the potato! That's it! Yes, yeah,
I thought it was the same sun that hardens clay and melts butter.
That too. Same that concept. Too.
That's a better one.
If your solution for people is, just go stand in the sun, you have to know what material you're working
with. Are you talking to clay or butter?
Are you talking to clay or the egg? Oh, wait, that's another mix. Right.
Well, the people that I'm talking to seem buttery.
I know. I'm
doing my best judgment.
I know. But the Bible says that the older ladies are supposed to help the younger ones. And across
but
the
But I
board,
only work with women. Well, actually, this was a dude. I told a dude. So
you told a dude to go and get his wife pregnant more often. And you have Did know you? Even less about.
I didn't put it in those terms.
He's like, you guys should have more babies. And they haven't even had the first one quite yet.
They have. Oh, they in like January.
Oh, that's okay. What like super old women say all the time.
Well,
you should. When are you going to get started having babies?
That's wisdom is wisdom. All right.
Old soul. I'm saying
we've changed him not at all.
Even when you've got a very buttery person who's ready to be taught.
So buttery.
There aren't very many teachers available right now.
Which is why I'm teaching.
No. No.
Check and mate.
Your
teaches.
Book is about. The book that we have written for you on this episode is about the extent of your ability to teach a woman. And that's just, like, I'm talking pure practical. I'm talking purely the day-to-day, like, logistics of running a household and disciplining kids and trying to be a good wife.
That's all secondary.
It really is more complicated than what the average person thinks. And then they think they're doing it wrong because they're like, well, Luke McKinney told me I should be able to just do this.
Yeah,
naturally.
It feels like I'm drowning. Just jump in the water and just start learning how to swim. And it's like, it feels like I'm drowning. No, you're fine. You have to know who you're talking to. And
if it makes you feel better, almost everybody that I've taught has not listened.
So. Yeah, that makes me feel a lot better.
We'll hang on to that hope.
Thanks for visiting the Comedian's House. If you want to spend more time with our family, you can follow John Branion on YouTube and Facebook. Also email nextdoor@johnbranion.com with your comments and questions. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.